Because when we spoke last week, we agreed if they beat Kansas, we got to rally the troops again. Once again, live on the scene here in Arizona, site of the Final Four, we welcome back the voice of the Ducks, Jerry Allen. Hey, Jerry, so how's your week been?
You know, just another week at the office, pretty much. I mean, you know, you've been here,
here. you know, I was thinking, actually, because I'm insane, I went through the list, and, you know, from your first bowl game in 89, two national title games, four Rose Bowl, Pac-12 title games, Sweet 16, baseball regionals, Elite Eight, but that win against Kansas to make the Final Four of games you've called, how high up the list does that go with you personally?
Well, basketball-wise, it's probably, you know, the best. I mean, against a quality team. I mean, a great Kansas team to be able to dominate them in essentially on a home floor for Kansas was impressive and something totally unexpected. We thought it'd be a good game and New Oregon had a chance, but we didn't think they'd dominate that way. And I can't remember a game in my history where I could say it was that big and that much fun and meant that much.
I wanted to get to you started calling Oregon hoops and football in 87. And, yes. You know, we've talked a million times where the program has come. We've got that. But do you remember after you landed the gig, you know, leading up and then suddenly it's game day? Do you have recollections of your first football or basketball game as the voice of the Ducks? Or do you more think of it as your early days as their voice?
You know, I remember my first football game. We played Colorado at Colorado, and Todd McKim was doing my game analyst, and I was so anxious, nervous, and excited that my preparation, and preparation is everything in doing sports, and you know with your show how much you prepare. I had probably a stack of media guides and papers and number stack, probably, you know, 8-10 inches high. That I had been working on, and I took to the game with me, and I sat beside me, and I don't think I ever got into them. I was so unbelievably prepared, but I was also so nervous I can barely remember the game. I know Bill Musgrave got his first start in Oregon beat Colorado, but other than that, I don't remember much about the broadcast.
And by the way, in a lot of ways, people talk about that as the realization of, wow, winning at Colorado, a very prominent at the time Big Eight program, could they actually start to kind of climb from the ashes? So it was almost in a lot of ways. I know everybody talks about the pick, but a little mini watershed moment there for the program.
Oh, I think it definitely was. I think that the Bill Musgrave era really was the beginning of the successful run of Oregon football as we know it today. There's no doubt in my mind. I tried to take credit for that because I got to the same time he did, but nobody's ever accepted that. But Bill Musgrave elevated the program. And Rich Brooks worked so many years to get it there, and then when he got Musgrave at quarterback, and he had Terry Obey, and he had Derek Lavelle and Lattenberg. I mean, he had the players, but he didn't that quarterback, you know, until – you go back to Mike Jorgensen, maybe the last great quarterback. I think there might have been a Chris Miller in there somewhere. But no, Musgrave was really the key, I thought.
That's great. And by the way, I can't wait to share that with Jorgie. we continue with the voice of the Ducks, Jerry Allen. So, you know, winning an Elite Eight game is amazing for any program. But and you mentioned it pretty quickly, that site in Kansas City, you know, in the shadow of Lawrence and Fog Allen Fieldhouse. And you mentioned it. It wasn't like they needed a late stop or buzzer beater. I mean, they're the better team. If you add all of that up, does that make that accomplishment of something maybe a little extra special?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, if Oregon would have been, you know, just holding on and just trying to eke out, hit some big shots to keep themselves in the game and then win it at the end with a buzzer beater, it was like, wow, we got by that one. But this was dominating from start to finish. Oregon played really great basketball and took the game away from Kansas. And Jordan Bell was really the key guy responsible for that. And then his teammates obviously chipped in. But they just took the game away from Kansas and never let them play their game. And, I you know, that was the most pleasing for me. That was a win that launched Oregon into the Final Four the way you'd expect a Final Four team to play.
You know, you've witnessed some incredible performances. I mean, I'm thinking recently Barner at USC in 2012, you know, the 59 points in the Rose Bowl against Florida State. Maybe locally Luke Jackson in the NIT when he scored like the last 29, 30 points. And you mentioned Jordan Bell, not only 8 blocks, he got in their head. You think that's one of those moments now that, you know, 10 years from now, hopefully we're still talking and be like, man, you remember that game Bell played against Kansas? Is it that big magnitude-wise?
Oh, I think it is, because I think Kansas had so much respect and was expected to be in the Final Four. Already, when I talk to people down here in the media who watched that and were aware of that game, they talk about Oregon's win, but what they talk about is the dominance of Jordan Bell and what he did in that game. I mean, that was a memorable game by a player who I think a lot of people weren't that aware of because of Chris Boucher. Boucher was the shot blocker. Bell blocked shots, too, but you know, Chris Boucher was getting more headlines for that. And so when Jordan Bell did what he did, I think it was like, oh, wow, Jordan Bell, didn't know he was that good. So a lot of people are talking about it now, which leads me to believe that that'll be a memory that a lot of sports fans and media will have years down the road.
Now, all year long, I've been kind of talking about Tyler Dorsey, and he was very streaky. The number I came up with, he shoots 46%, but he's only shot in the 40s in 6 of 38 games. But he's gone nuts. From what the coaches have said or what you've observed, is he just all of a sudden just Mr. March taking better shots? How do you account for a good player, you know, suddenly becoming great night in, night out when it matters the most?
You know, I don't know what the formula is for that, Steve. It's something unexpected, because you're right. He was inconsistent during the year. I mean, you know, he'd have a game where he'd hit 18, 24, something like that. And then he'd have two, three games where he'd get 5 or 7 points. He had a game where he got 2 points and no rebounds. I mean, it just wasn't there. And now to put together a 6 or 7 game run of 20-plus and hit the shots that he's hitting, I don't know what the answer is, other than to say, you know, he's kind of a veteran. Maybe he's a guy that's looking at the end of his college career and wants to play his best basketball right now. I don't know. But whatever's gotten into him, and part of it is rhythm, too. He had a game in the Pac-12 tournament and then got into the NCAA tournament where he started hitting some big shots. And success leads to success and confidence, and maybe it's as simple as that. He had a really good game, and that gave him confidence for the next game up, and then they just kept building on each other.
Yeah, maybe we shouldn't ask any questions as we continue with Jerry Allen. You know, when you see a successful mid-major or non-power league coach leave for one of the big boys, you always wonder how it'll work out. You know, we will never find out with Mark Few because he's staying. We saw what Chris Peterson has done with Washington in football. And so this applies when Dana Altman left Creighton. And you know, be it facilities or recruiting. And while winning a national title is the goal, you work closely with all the coaches, the games you call. From what I understand, many of those close to Coach Altman were in Kansas City. He's not the most outspoken guy, but overall, how is this sitting with Dana Altman?
Well, he's enjoying the moment, but he's the consummate coach, and that is trying not to enjoy it too much and make sure that we just got off the bus and he told his guys, "Guys, enjoy where you are. Enjoy what you've accomplished. But remember this, all you've accomplished goes away in a heartbeat if you don't win the next game. So you want to win a national championship, that stays with you for your life." So he wants them to enjoy, and I think he wants to enjoy it too. But at the same time, he's a head coach. He's a coach, and he wants to win the next game, and that's tomorrow. And then he wants to win the next one. So, I mean, he's one of the most asked questions I've had out here is, who's Dana Altman? Where did he come from? I mean, you know, and Steve, I think the biggest issue is, and I've said this to some of the guys on the East Coast, it's that what we call the East Coast bias. Not their fault. We play 8 or 9 o'clock at night, midnight on the East Coast. They don't see Coach Altman. They don't see the teams in the West play, so they're just not as aware. They get up in the morning and see the score in the paper or hear it on the radio, and oh, wow, that's cool, Oregon won. They don't know Dana Altman, and he doesn't want the spotlight of the stage, so he doesn't take opportunities to throw his name out there. But he's fun to be around. I believe so much in this team and in the program and where it's going to be, you know, in the future because of him and the way he handles his players. Not a screamer, not a yeller, just a great teacher.
Jerry, let's wrap with this. I think the price of poker goes up tomorrow. This North Carolina team, let's not forget, they're a buzzer beater away from being the defending champs. And, you know, making it in back-to-back Final Four is not too shabby. We know their resume, size, experience. What are the guys saying? And from your chair, you know, what kind of challenge are they talking about getting from this Tar Heel team?
Well, a really athletic, great rebounding team. And I've heard that word from our guys. Got a rebound. They're plus 13 on the boards. A lot of offensive rebounds. And that's second-chance points. And that alone will kill you in a big ball game. And then the other thing is turnovers. You know, you don't want to give teams transition baskets and points off turnovers. So both of those are going to be critical. Oregon's got to hit the boards, not give up easy baskets on second chance points to North Carolina, and then take care of the ball, which they've done a pretty good job of. And I guess the other critical thing is, and I've heard the Carolina players talk about this, they're going to try to get Jordan Bell in foul trouble. They know that he's a critical part of Oregon's defense, but they also know that Oregon doesn't have a very deep bench in that spot now with Boucher gone. So their emphasis is going to be take the ball inside and make Jordan Bell prove that he can block those shots again.
This is just awesome. He's the voice of the Ducks. A big one gets checked off the bucket list tomorrow. I said it last Friday, and I'm saying it again. Thanks for joining us, and I sure hope you got another broadcast on Monday. Much appreciate you finding some time, Jerry. Enjoy it.
Appreciate it so much, Steve. It's always great to be on with you. Let's do this again really soon, okay?
I'm looking forward to it, my
friend. Okay, thanks,
buddy. Have a good one.